Today is Monday, February 6. We're going to be talking about epithelial tissues today from Chapter 4. Okay, so we're going to talk about histology today. This is page 43, and our coverage of tissues is going to overlap a lot of what you've done in lab. So we know that histology is simply the study of tissues. It does require a microscope because this is not anything you can see with the naked eye. All of this stuff does require a microscope to see the cell structures. We know there are four general categories of tissues. Each of these categories shares common features. So we're going to start with the epithelial tissues, the covering and lining tissues first. We may have time today to talk about connective tissues. If not, we'll save those for Wednesday. We'll also talk on Wednesday about muscle tissues and nervous tissues. So in terms of general versus specific, the general categories are epithelial, connective, muscle, and nervous tissue. And I know that's been driven in lab, general versus specific, right? Okay. So let's hit epithelial tissue first. This particular category of tissues is ones that covers and lines our bodies. One good way to remember that is the prefix epi means what?
Above.
So it literally lays above our tissues. And not only does it cover the outside of your body, it also covers the inside surfaces, especially those that open to the outside world. All of our epithelial tissues have a free surface called an apical surface. They all have an attached lower portion called a basement membrane. So if you want to confirm that you have an epithelial tissue, I would look for that apical surface. I'll show you several. We'll start to get in the routine habit of looking for that apical surface to confirm that it is, in fact, an epithelial tissue. So when they do these tissue slides, they take a really thin slice with a little tiny knife called a microtome. And what it should create is a free surface. In this picture, it's at the top of the page. And that free surface means that tissue's not attached to anything near the top. Then down here near the bottom, you'll notice an abrupt change in the way those tissues look or the color that they're stained. So down here is what I would say is our basement membrane. Stuff down below is actually a different tissue type. It's got a different cell shape. It's even stained a different color. So, you know, once you get into the routine habit of looking at tissues, you'll be more comfortable finding your free surface and your basement membrane. That is, it is stratified. Yep. Good for you. Yay! Here's another stratified squamous. You'll notice that up top is your free surface, kind of cut off there at the top of the picture. Lots and lots of packed layers of cells. And then way down here, in fact, is the basement membrane that transitions to a different tissue type. So all of our epithelial tissue should have an upper free surface and a basement membrane. I want to caution you, though, on lab tests. Don't expect the picture to be upright, because if it's flipped upside down, it still has an apical surface. It's just at the bottom of the picture, okay? So I don't want you to get hung up on the fact that the apical surface is always at the top of the picture. It can be rotated left, right, upside down. If you find a free surface, you've got yourself an apical surface. Okay. Sometimes stuff like that makes your brain go during the lab test. So I don't want you to have one of those moments and go, oh my gosh, where's the apical surface at? Okay. You will notice there are no blood vessels here. Epithelial tissues are avascular in nature. The word avascular literally means no blood vessels. Now, there is a blood supply coming to your epithelial tissues. It just happens to come from the deeper underlying connective tissues, but you'll notice that there are no blood vessels directly traveling through those epithelial tissues. Why?
It's
part of it's dead. It grows really fast. And a lot of it is meant to be protective. And if you happen to scrape away several layers and there's blood vessels there, you could actually induce bleeding every time you scraped away those outer layers. You know, imagine what your clothes do to your skin every day. They do rub off and remove outer layers of skin. Shaving, for instance, removes several outer layers of the epidermis. And if you don't cut too deeply, you're not going to bleed because the blood vessels are down in that connective tissue. Now, even though our epithelial tissues tend to be avascular, they are innervated, which means they have what?
Nerves.
They do have nerves, right? So we do need to know about the outside world or the inside world. So we do find a nerve supply runs into these epithelial or epidermis type tissues. Let's talk about the naming scheme here. These epithelial tissues are found inside and outside your body as covering and lining surfaces. And so we want to understand how we name these tissues that we find covering and lining our body surfaces. We need to know two bits of information. We need to know how many layers, and then we need to know what the predominant cell shape is going to be. So for these covering and lining types of tissues, we tend to see one layer is a simple tissue. More than one layer is known as a stratified tissue. Let's talk about cell shape. If we find cells near the apical surface have a flattened shape, we call that a what cell?
Squamous.
Squamous or squamous, good. So these tend to look squashed flat. That's the name squamous. And likewise, because they're squashed flat, they're going to have a nucleus that's also squashed. So sometimes you can see the outline of the cell. It looks kind of like a little flattened molehill. And if you can see the nucleus inside, it often looks like an egg or a football laying on its side. I like biology when they make sense out of it. A cuboidal shaped cell is, guess what?
Cube.
Okay. So, nice square-looking cell. Okay, and if you happen to see the nucleus, what shape does it take on?
Perfect circle.
A perfect little circle, good. So I think you probably get the idea that the nucleus takes on the shape of the cell. Likewise, for a columnar or columnar cell, we have a long brick-shaped cell, just like a column. And how would the nucleus appear?
Kind of
oval. Oval, yeah, kind of elongated. Good.
It's just a little white in the squamous. That's what it looks like.
In terms of the nucleus, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's laying on a side and it's standing up on its end. Yeah. So I want to make the point here about these cells. Sometimes the plasma membrane takes up stain and it makes the cell really, the shape really snap at you and it says, hey, I'm cuboidal. It makes it really easy to spot. Sometimes they use pink stain, sometimes they use purple or blue stain. So don't get too attached to the color that you see on those stains. The second thing I want to point out is sometimes the plasma membrane doesn't stain, but the nucleus has DNA which does soak up stain. So looking for the cell's nucleus is also a really good hint. And if you're questionable about the shape of the cell, go for the nucleus shape because that's probably giving you the confirmation you need. Now, I want to point out when we have stratified or multiple layers to a tissue, where are the oldest tissues found or the oldest cells found?
On the surface.
Good. Near the top or the apical surface. Good. So the basement membrane is, in fact, where mitosis occurs. In this picture, way down here is your basement membrane. If you were to look closely, those cells along the basement membrane look somewhat cuboidal. That's not giving us the truest cell shape. These cells up top here actually give us the truest cell shape, and they're, in fact, stratified squamous cells. Yeah. This one's probably even better. See how these look cuboidal down toward the basement? And then these up toward the top look very flattened. So the oldest cells give us the truest cell shape anytime you've got a stratified tissue.
The ones on the bottom look more columnar then.
Sometimes columnar, sometimes cuboidal, but either way, they're not telling you the truth as to what they are.
So you look for the top.
Always look for the top, yeah. So even these through here don't necessarily look like the right cell shape, but up near the top, I think those nuclei probably look fairly flat. That's probably where I would go first, is the apical surface for my stratified tissues. Okay. I just want to emphasize when we name these, we name them with the number of cell layers first. So we put simple or stratified first. And then we put the cell shape second. So simple cuboidal would tell me how many cell layers and the predominant cell shape. So in a simple cuboidal tissue, how many cell layers do we have?
One.
Just one, good. And the predominant cell shape for a cuboidal tissue? Yeah. Square shaped cells, round nucleus, good, okay. I would always include ET or epithelial tissue at the end. That way we can classify it back to its general category. So the general category we're discussing is epithelial. The specific type is something like simple cuboidal, stratified, squamous, and so forth. Am I with you? Are you with me? We're all good so far? I lost you anywhere? Not yet? Okay. Just a detour, at the bottom of your page, I'd like to tell you about how all these cells get kind of held on together to each other. These are cell junctions at the very bottom of your page. So you think about all these trillions of cells in your body, and you may wonder, how is it they stay hooked together? You know, why don't we fall apart into this big mass of cells? It's a wonder that all these cells and tissues stay linked together. And so how they stay linked together is through something called cell junctions. The first type of cell junction we're going to discuss is called a tight junction, otherwise known as an occluding junction. Okay, so the word tight junction gives us a big clue about what's happening here. These are tight junctions pictured here. A lot of people describe them as welding. One cell is literally welded to its neighboring cell. So, in fact, the welding is so tight, there is no room for any fluids to travel between those cells and tissues. So if you have water, maybe from a swimming pool, perhaps from the ocean or even a bathtub, that water cannot make its way through those tight junctions and pass into the interior of your body. That's great news because, you know, if you're ever worried about getting in a swimming pool and gaining 10 to 20 pounds of water weight, as long as you've got intact tight junctions, you're good to go. So they prevent you from gaining water fluid when you get into a pool or losing water fluid if you get into the ocean. All right, the next one there is called a gap junction. These on the right-hand side are what we think of as gaps between neighboring cells. They are like protein channels that stand open like doorways, okay? So if you've ever been to a hotel room that has the interior door that opens to the neighboring hotel room, you know how creepy that is, right? And if you're not traveling with friends or family, you don't know who's on the other side of that door, and I bet you're like me and you check to make sure it's locked right off the bat. That is a gap junction. You don't have to go in the hallway and knock on the neighbor's door. All you have to do is open up that gap junction between you and the neighbor's hotel room. So this is what cells do. They have these gap junctions that say, hey, we're friends and family, open up the doorways, let ions, nutrients, electrolytes flow right on through. And that's how your heart works with all these gap junctions. You know them by a different name though. Do you know what the gap junctions in the heart are called?
Discs.
The muscle tissue has those intercalated discs. Those are in fact gap junctions. Okay. Desmosomes are shown here on the far left. They are like fibers or proteins that grow into a neighboring cell, and they're not necessarily preventing water from passing through the two cell areas. they're actually just keeping the cells linked together. So if you've ever been really dry or perhaps sunburned, you may notice that you can see visible flakes of skin come off your body. Those visible flakes of skin are actually held together by desmosomes. So the desmosomes link together the cells in a layer or more of skin. So when they're sloughed off your skin, they come off in layers that are linked by desmosomes. So I think of desmosomes like a three-legged race. You know, you and your neighbor tie your leg together in a sack and run. That's what a desmosome is for cells. It's literally linking physically two cells together. So it prevents tears, it prevents stretching. Okay, so they're not tight junctions, they're not preventing water passage, they're simply linking you to your neighbor.
Prevents tears and
stretching. That prevents water from traveling between cells is what?
Tight
junctions, good. The type of junction that prevents cells from being ripped apart? Yeah, desmosomes. And then what do gap junctions do? Yeah, good. They're intercalated discs. They let stuff travel like electrolytes from one cell to the next. Tight junctions are like welding. They're literally spot welds that glue one cell to the neighbor. And the goal is to prevent fluids from passing between the two cells.
But you said it allows things like electrolytes to pass.
Gap do. They let electrolytes travel through. Tight junctions don't let anything through.
Yeah, gap junctions is not just electrolytes, it's protein.
Yeah, it's just whatever you need to flow from one cell to the next can pass through that junction. If it helps to know, desmo means band. So desmosomes are literally bands that hold the cells together. So desmo means band.
So in a form of a question that you had asked in terms of the test, you had asked similar like to those three questions that you just asked, and you want to say about what they did.
Right. I commonly ask, you know, if I go swimming in a pool, why don't I bloat with water? It's thanks to
tight junctions.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that would be bad.
That would be bad. No one would ever bathe. I usually don't put pictures of those on the test. I usually just put some kind of words to describe them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just want to show you some others before we go on to the next page. These are more tight junctions. You can see they really don't let stuff travel between the two neighboring cells. These bands here that are fuzzy are actually desmosomes. There's several of them in this picture. And the tight junction looks a little different, but it's a watertight area. It's like watertight welds that prevent any fluids from traveling between the cells. Here are more gap junctions, like the ones in our heart. They are literally open doorways between two neighboring cells. And more desmosomes. The word band, again, comes to mind. They are literally banded together. Okay. Well, if you're ready, let's go take a look at some specific types of epithelial tissues. I know it all. Okay, so what's your comfort level? I know some of you have a lab test coming up very, very soon. Next Friday. Some of you have it tomorrow.
No, next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday. Okay, so you got about a week or more to study for this. Thank goodness, yeah. I'm glad we're getting a chance to do it here, so you at least have it from both directions, from lecture and lab.
Yeah, I'm glad we're
Well, hopefully hearing it just twice, three times will, maybe we can point out some, maybe she points out things that I don't point out and vice versa. Yeah. Okay. Before we even look at a picture, I want to talk about the name. The name is Simple Squamous. So what can you tell me before you ever look at a picture?
One layer,
it's flat. Good. If I can't see the cell shape and I do see the nucleus shape, they are squished flat. Good. So that's my mental image going into this. And when I take a look at a picture at low magnification like this, I honestly cannot see the cell shape or anything else. So at low magnification, I have a very difficult time confirming this is in fact simple squamous epithelium. Zoom it up into a little higher magnification, and you kind of get a sense of what's going on a little higher. And here's a very big close-up, very high magnification simple squamous epithelium. What I'm looking for is not perfection. What I'm looking for is more or less a single layer of cells. And so when I look at these layers through here, I see roughly one cell layer thickness. I don't see two stacked layers. Okay, two stacked layers, just like you're laying bricks, would confirm for me that it's stratified. But I can't really say that I see two clean stacked layers, right? Okay, well, so what I see is more or less a single layer, give or take. It's a little jumbled because what they're doing here is they're using a microtome, a very thin knife, to create a very thin section. So in doing so, they're going to pick up layers perhaps back behind. So it's not a perfect slice, so we kind of have to be a little forgiving with the fact that we've got more or less a single layer of cells. This is one of those pictures that I would just kind of say, memorize. It's hard to think through this one because you don't necessarily see a basement membrane. The basement membrane is behind what you're looking at. This is simple squamous in the long alveolar air sacs. Okay? So air sacs in high magnification, this is mid-range magnification, and of course this is low magnification.
But you're going to know that simply because you don't see them stacked on top of each other.
I don't see them stacked. Yeah. Just for reference, this is probably either a blood vessel or a bronchial tube passing through the lungs. So I don't want you to think, you know, gosh, what is that? That doesn't fit the rule, right? But that is probably some other structure traveling through. Same thing up here. That's probably a blood vessel or bronchial passageway. Yeah. Okay. I just want to caution you. If you happen to search the internet in search of pictures to study by, now it's a really good choice to do that. But beware. Sometimes when they do a simple squamous section, they're doing a top-down section, and that looks like this, which I swear does not look like simple or squamous, does it?
It looks like a cuboidal.
It does, yeah.
So,
looks pretty like cuboidal, doesn't it? But not squamous, so be very careful if you search the internet. Okay, so just to review here, we know that simple squamous is very thin. It is built for diffusion because you've only got a single cell layer of cells across which gases must pass. In addition to your long alveolar air sacs, where else might you find this tissue? Good. Serous membranes, which are around the outside of your heart and lungs and digestive organs. The inside of your vessels, including your capillaries, are constructed of simple squamous epithelial tissue. You're right, kidneys also have some simple squamous in them as well. So in addition to diffusion, what else is this tissue built for?
Filtration
and secretion. Good. Okay, so let me explain what filtration is. Filtration is pushing fluids across membranes. It's kind of like osmosis, but it requires more force or pressure to push fluids across. And of course, secretion means releasing things like a hormone or perhaps a glob of mucus or something of that sort. So we do secrete a bunch of things from these epithelial tissues. So number of cell layers, your blank there should be one. For a stratified squamous, what were you put for cell layers?
Small.
Many's good, yeah. Okay, so many is good. So before we even look at a picture, I expect to see many cell layers. I expect to see the top layers, which are near the apical surface, to be flattened or squamous in shape. And so we have to keep in mind that the apical surface has the oldest cells, and that's where we look for the mature cell shape. We shouldn't look toward the basement membrane. What's happening down here?
Mitosis,
right. So these cells close to your basement membrane are all immature cells. You'll notice they have a cuboidal or a columnar cell shape and nucleus shape. So that's not going to give you the right cell shape. But if you look up here toward the top, those are really nice looking stratified squamous, very flat cells with a flattened nucleus. So when you're talking about the oldest cells, they are nearest what layer?
Apical.
Good. And the newest cells are nearest what layer?
Basement.
Good. Now, which of those two regions is attached to another tissue type?
Basement.
Right. In fact, you'll notice the cell shape shifts dramatically as we go down into connective tissue. So stratified squamous is built for protection. It is often subjected to abrasion. So we need the thickness of layers there to kind of help avoid damaging those underlying cell types. So let's talk about keratinized versus non-keratinized stratified squamous. So keratin is a protein you find in your epidermis. It is only on the outside of your body. We do not expect to find keratin inside your body. In fact, if you think about the moistness of the inside of your mouth, that is the moistness of a mucous membrane made up of stratified squamous. There is no keratin inside your mouth. If you compare that to what's on your outside cheek, that is a very dry surface, and that's keratinized. So we only find keratin on the outer surfaces of our bodies, and it's meant to be a waterproofing protein. So now, if you're keeping track, we've got two things that prevent water from passing either through our tissues into our body or out. What kind of junction prevents water passage?
Tight
junctions, good. And now we've got keratin that also is going to prevent us from drying out and prevents water loss or desiccation. So for comparison, this is keratinized epithelium. What I'm looking at are several layers of dry, dead keratin on the outer surface of this tissue, and it's meant to be a waterproofing protein. It actually accumulates on your feet, your hands. We know it forms corns and calluses. And it's meant to be a protective outer covering for our skin. Compare that to this one. This is non-keratinized stratified squamous. There seems to be less of that stuff on the outer surface, but both pictures show many layers of flattened cells. This is probably better. Notice those nuclei are flat. And then as you get closer to the basement membrane, you notice a big shift in the cell shape. Those are the most immature cells that just underwent what process?
Mitosis.
Mitosis, good. Okay, so a lot of times we often say, hey, that looks like the basement membrane right through there. Yeah, but it's not, it's actually this curvy bottom layer. Okay, so all of your stratified squamous has a curvy bottom layer, and I'll tell you why. You ever get a blister where you've worn a shoe? Okay, so that shoe was probably rubbing back and forth all day against the spot on your skin. And if those two layers, your epithelial tissue and your connective tissue, were literally laying flat like sandwich layers, then it would take nothing to friction off that outer layer of epithelial tissue. But in fact, having them groove together with a curvy junction prevents those layers from frictioning. You may build up a water blister, but you're unlikely to remove your epidermis completely. So when you're looking for stratified squamous and you want to find the basement membrane, look for the curvy bottom layer. Looks like an egg crate. And the job is to really tongue and groove together those epithelial tissues with their underlying connective tissues. Okay, so you can see it there. You kind of see it here. Okay, you can see it's curvy down there. So that curvy bottom is what's linking your epithelial to your underlying connective tissue. So we know keratinized epithelial is found in the skin. Where do you find non-keratinized epithelial tissue?
I would say anywhere that holds a lot of moisture.
Yeah, moisture inside, yeah. So any place that opens to the outside world, right? Okay, so think about your digestive tract. Mouth and anus open to the outside world. They are lined with stratified squamous that is non-keratinized in nature. On the other end, you've got the urethra. Well, the urethra is a different story, so we'll save that for later. In females, you've got the vagina. That is lined with stratified squamous epithelium. Is it keratinized or non-keratinized?
Non-keratinized.
Okay, so those openings to the outside world, into the respiratory, digestive, both ends coming back out, going to be non-keratinized stratified squamous epithelial tissue. So in this picture, look closely. Can you see the apical surface?
Yes.
Yep, way out here, isn't it? Okay.
Oh, wow.
So all of that stuff is dry, dead, keratinized epithelial cells. When you start getting to the pink stuff, those are the ones that are still alive. And to confirm, there's our groovy and curvy basement membrane. So it kind of locks us into that underlying connective tissue. In this picture, can you see the apical surface?
Yes.
Okay, but the very top. And again, all of that is stacked layers of keratinized dead epithelial tissues. Down here is still stratified squamous, but these are the living cells, and down at the very bottom, that's your basement membrane. So as thick as that looks, that's no thicker than a piece of paper towel. So it looks insanely thick, but you know, reality-wise, it's not more thick than a piece of paper towel. Okay. So can you tell me two locations for stratified squamous?
Lining of your mouth.
No, it's not going to. You're not going to ask, is it keratinized or not?
I'm not.
Just two locations.
Just two locations, yeah.
Anal?
Anal canal, good.
Skin.
Mouth,
nose.
Mouth, nose, good.
Here.
So coming in, going out. That's a good way to keep it straight. All right, next one is simple cuboidal. And it has how many cell layers?
One.
Just one, good. We know the predominant cell shape here is a cube-shaped cell with a round nucleus. Where's the basement membrane in this picture? Basement membrane. Basement membrane is right through there. Where's your apical surface?
On the side. On the side.
Actually, yeah, down here. Yeah, this is an upside down picture, so just it's good to be on your toes, right?
But that lighter surface actually looks like it would be the dead skin we were just looking at on the other side.
But this is most likely not skin. This is probably some kind of internal tissue. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. I see that. Glands and all that stuff.
Glands, yeah. Yeah. And this is ciliated, which is going to be inside somewhere. So those little tiny hairs hanging down are cilia. So this simple cuboidal tissue is found in several different places. Can you name some for me? Ovaries?
Kidneys,
good. Once again. Glands, good. Sometimes it's ciliated, like you see here. And sometimes it is set up in a ring setup, like you've got in this picture and in this picture. So what you're looking at are these tubes created by simple cuboidal epithelium. You're like looking down into drinking straws, so that's what these round structures are, like right through there. So now, this innermost portion is your apical surface, and this outer portion here is your basement membrane. What is this other stuff? Is this epithelial? That stuff is connective tissue. Okay, so it's not even part of the conversation right now. It's some type of connective tissue linking together all of these little tubes here within the kidneys. This is probably one of the better pictures of kidney tubules, this one and this one here. really clear, easy to see rings of cuboidal cells. Okay. So can you tell me some of the functions of this tissue?
Secretion, nutrition.
Good. Absorption, secretion. Okay. Anytime you have a single cell layer, it is great for things like absorption, secretion, diffusion if necessary. So you don't often find simple tissues providing protection from abrasion. Why not?
Because they're easy to tear.
They're easy to tear, exactly. So these single layer tissues are often good for things like absorption, secretion, diffusion, filtration. You're not going to find them doing functions like protection from abrasion. So if you're having trouble getting this to stick, that's one way to kind of classify stratifieds versus the simples. Sure. Most of our simple tissues do things like absorption, secretion, filtration, and diffusion. So if you're stuck and you need to take a stab in the dark, that'd probably be pretty right for most of our simple tissues. And we've only got one stratified. And this is the only one that provides protection. So simple tissues provide absorption, secretion, filtration, diffusion. The stratified ones are often built for protection, especially the stratified squamous of our skin and inside our mouth, nose, and of course rectum and anus. Okay, sweat glands are simple cuboidal. So if you had not had the label up here that this was a sweat gland, could you have confirmed it was simple cuboidal? What was the big clue?
It was in a circle, empty space in the middle.
Good, got empty space in the middle. Nice round circular nucleus. I can't see the cell shape very well, can you? Not too easily, but yeah, those nice round nuclei are a great hint.
And what is that on the other side? Is that like loose adipose or something?
It probably is, yeah, that's what that looks like. And that's a great way to do it, is to look big picture. What else do I have in this picture slide? It's a great way to study. All right. Simple columnar has one cell layer. What do we expect the cell shape to be?
Column,
good. And the nucleus shape? Oval, good. Now, most of these simple columnar are in our digestive tract. You'll notice examples there include things like your stomach and intestines. And oftentimes what we have here embedded are goblet cells. And so goblet cells in this picture are little white circles. What do they release?
Mucus,
yeah. So we oftentimes have goblet cells in our simple columnar tissues. Those goblet cells release mucus.
Is goblet cells a simple columnar?
As far as I know, yeah. But you can find them in the nose, which is pseudostratified, and so they're obviously in other tissues, but that's where we most commonly talk about in a simple columnar.
Are layers for that one's kind of
what's that?
Layers?
Oh, just one cell layer. So I know you kind of think about mucus in your nasal cavity. You think about mucus in your respiratory system. We don't usually think about mucus in our digestive tract, but thank you, mucus, for helping our poop move along. If you didn't have mucus in your digestive tract, then there'd be nothing to lubricate and slide the passage of food and feces out the other end. So yeah, we do need that mucus there in the digestive tract. It also helps to trap bacteria. You know, we've got a lot of bacteria that naturally reside in our digestive system, and this is one way to trap, say, perhaps bad bacteria from getting into your bloodstream. So goblet cells release mucus. They are, of course, not in this picture, but this is a good one. You've got a couple of goblet cells embedded. And again, what we're looking for is not perfection. We see more or less a single layer of cells. These look like shadows of cells picked up from layers cut behind this tissue, But more or less between the apical surface and the basement membrane, I see about a single layer of cells. So what are some functions for this tissue?
Secretion.
Yep, absorption and secretion. Hey, it follows the rules, right? Most of our simple tissues can do absorption, secretion, or filtration and diffusion. Okay, just want to show you this picture. It is a low magnification of the small intestine lining. It is an epithelial tissue. And what we've got here are these villi of simple columnar epithelial cells. I know it's too low to see the details of those simple columnar cells, but they line every single one of those finger-like extensions sticking out. So there's literally 20 feet of villi in your small intestine, all with these little projections sticking up to increase surface area for absorption of nutrients. So lots and lots of those down there in the digestive system. Okay, so this one here, pseudostratified columnar, has how many cell layers? Just one. Okay, pseudostratified has just one cell layer. Pseudo as a prefix means what?
False,
right. So it looks falsely stratified, but in reality it has only one cell layer. Mentioned a few times today, when they do these cuts of tissues, they use a very tiny knife called a microtome, and they create a very thin section of tissue. But unfortunately, sometimes it's just not thin enough, and what they get makes it look like a different tissue type. And that's exactly what happens with pseudostratified columnar epithelial tissue. What you've got here is basically numerous cell layers. It looks like they're numerous cell layers that are stacked. But in reality, you're getting falsely looking stratified layers. In fact, every single one of these cells touches the basement membrane, which is why we would classify it as a simple tissue. Okay, go ahead, Carol.
Whenever you give us pseudostratified, would you always include the cilia?
Most, yeah. I think every one I've got has cilia. Their cilia. Yeah, they all have cilia. Because they're mostly...
Yeah, because you can identify it.
Yeah, because that otherwise it kind of is tricky to pick up on.
I really like that picture. You want to stick with that one?
That's a good one there.
Right, yeah.
That's clear. One cool thing about this stuff is the cilia. You guys did pick up on the cilia, so that's good to notice. This particular tissue is found in your respiratory tract, and the specific regions that it's sitting in, like your trachea, for instance, this stuff is helping to move contaminated dust, debris, and mucus up and out of your lungs so that you don't swallow it or get it down into your respiratory passageways where it can move into the bloodstream. So this cilia is very important for sweeping along items such as contaminated mucus, dust, or debris.
It almost kind of looks like, I don't want to say teeth, but the way that it's...
stacked. Yeah, it looks like a mouthful of teeth, yeah. So I think one thing to look for is the nice columnar-shaped nucleus. I think all of these have very clear column-shaped nuclei. And one thing that to look for, if you happen to get a pseudostratified tissue, you don't see like layers of bricks, one layer and then a clear second layer or a clear third layer. It looks like a jumbled set of layers. I think that's what's the signal to me that I've got a pseudostratified ciliated columnar epithelial tissue. So it looks kind of like layers, but in fact, reality-wise, you've got all those cells touching the basement membrane. Okay, this one is an oddball, transitional. Where is it located?
Bladder.
Yeah, bladder, urethra, ureters. So notice the trend. Simple columnar was often in the digestive system. Pseudostratified was often in the respiratory system. And this one, transitional, is often in the urinary system. The reason for this one is it needs to stretch as urine travels through ureters, urinary bladder, and urethra. It needs to stretch. So tell me your trick. How do you identify this one?
Because it starts teeny and then
it starts small.
That's how I look at it.
Small toward the basement membrane?
Not really small, because all of them kind of look small, but it just looks like it's changing.
It does. That's a great way. It's changing. Yeah. Do you have other hints for picking this one out?
Miss Floyd told us that they go together like a shoe in a box.
Mm-hmm. They do fit together like shoes in a box. That's good. I want you to notice the orientation of the cells at the apical surface. The apical surface cells are all cuboidal in appearance, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Okay? And I want you to notice, you're right, like shoes in a box are all pointing toward the basement membrane. And so that's one thing to look for, is that they're pointing at the basement membrane. Every one of these points toward the basement membrane. So they're not situated like stratified squamous cells. They're not flattened layers at the apical surface. In fact, when you're looking at transitional tissue, the cells of the apical surface actually look cuboidal, and they're pointed toward the basement membrane. So they're not laying flattened layers. Here's another view of transitional. Notice that almost all these cells point toward the basement membrane. And notice the nuclei look cuboidal in shape. So the whole name of the game here is stretch. These are meant to stretch upon expansion of the bladder, the urethra, the ureters. So this particular tissue does not have the flattened nuclei like you see in stratified squamous. So what I would do is convince myself I could tell the difference. I would take a transitional tissue, lay it side by side, stratified squamous, and then say, okay, what can I use to tell the difference between the two?
Squamous is like that. So transition is kind of like that.
Like a T. Yep. Yep. Good. So notice flattened layers. Notice the flattened nuclei. Notice these are more cube-shaped nuclei. Okay. And just for comparison, for those who may be confused on pseudostratified columnar epithelial tissue, this is in fact stratified columnar. It has a layer of cuboidal and a layer of stratified, there's a layer of a columnar on top. So you can see there's two distinctive layers when you're talking about this particular tissue. So you don't have to know this one, but sometimes it's good to know what you're not looking for. And this one is not pseudostratified. This in fact is a stratified columnar tissue. So,
will we have?
No, this is just for comparison. Okay. So what we'll do in here on Wednesday is pick up with connective tissues, and we'll work through connective, muscle, and nervous on Wednesday.